Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the first installment of BBA Baseball Talk. I'm Daniel from Cardinal 70 at the C70 at the Bat, www.cardinal70.com. I'm with Ron from Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Daniel. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And we're going to up front apologize for any bumps and glitches that we may have as it's our first show. As you can tell, we just kind of walk right into it, and we're going to kind of play it by ear and see what we can do with this. And Ron and I we've talked on the email and stuff, and we're going to try to see if we can't talk about the stories of the day and maybe get into a little bit of looking at what the teams look like as camps open up starting tomorrow for a lot of teams. It's a great time of year. It's spring training, and most everybody's fairly optimistic about your team. So to get started, I want to talk about the Baseball Bloggers Alliance, which is the BBA part of our title. We've come together as a blogging group. We've got 132 members. We are, exchanging ideas and collaborations and working on projects with each other. We've been doing this now for a few months. We did some off-season or voting last October on awards, and everything seems to be kind of rolling together. Ron, you've been, I don't remember exactly how long you've been a member, but what's been your experience with the BBA so far?
Well, I'm a brand new member, Daniel, and so far it's nice to come into a community where we have common interests. You mentioned, there are a lot of team-specific blogs, and there are some other blogs out there that are more issue-oriented or on different topics other than regular day-to-day game operations. So it's a nice group, a nice eclectic group, and I'm looking forward to working with you guys.
Well, it's been really good so far, and hopefully we can continue to grow and be that kind of organization. And now that we've gotten our little sales pitch out of the way, if you will, for anybody that might be listening across the fruited plain, anybody that may want to call in, our call-in number is 347-884-8690. And if you've got a baseball-related question, we'll talk about it. We may not have any answers, but we'll talk about it nonetheless. And I guess, Ron, we'll get started with the bigger story of today, was that Chinmin Wong signed with the Nationals. It kind of been talked about for about a week, and it finally got finalized. $2 million deal, a chance to go up to $3 million. Washington's been pretty busy this offseason.
They have, and it's kind of surprising because, of course, the last several years they've been in last place. Last year they lost more than 100 games. But with all the acquisitions they've made this year, and with some of the injured pitchers coming back from last year, and Steven Strasburg waiting in the wings, they might surprise some people.
Do you think they've picked up a lot of pitchers. Do you think that's kind of a hedge against rushing Strasburg, making sure that they don't have to put him in the starting rotation come April?
I hope so. I'm not expecting him to come up that soon. They might wait a little bit, maybe May, maybe June, depending on how John Lannon comes along. But and Chinmin Wong won't be ready for a few weeks also. But I hope they don't rush this kid, just like they rushed David Clyde back when the Texas Rangers all those years ago. He looks like he could be something special, and I hope they give him the chance to develop and not get knocked around too soon. And Washington needs something to look forward to.
Well, this is definitely true. It's been a rough franchise, and that to have that kind of star is really something to grab onto if you're a Nationals fan. Long has been, I'd say he's only been with the Yankees, so this is going to be a new experience for him. I don't know if I haven't seen any reason why necessarily he picked Washington. Have you heard anything about maybe what the rationale was for going to a team like that?
I haven't, but you wonder, a guy like that, he's not quite 30 years old yet. He's had a fantastic run so far. Going to the National League, I think it only helped him because you've got that pitcher spot that comes up. you need someone to take a chance on him. I guess the injury bug has made some teams afraid to take a flyer on him. So, and an interesting thing I just want to mention with Jason Marquis signing with the Nationals, he's very unusual in that every team he's played on in his 10-year career has made it to the postseason. Now, that might bring a little pressure on him now with Washington right away, but it's just interesting to take a look at the record and see what he's done with those he's been with.
Oh, that's true. And really, and as a Cardinal fan, seeing Marquis in some of that stretch, we know that you know, his team has made the playoffs all those years, but he's not always pitched in the playoffs.
No.
He's not always made the actual roster. So it's kind of interesting that he's on this run, but he hasn't actually necessarily played in 10 postseasons. It's just
unfortunately, he's got that reputation as being a first-half pitcher. You know, he does extremely well in the first part of the season, but once the All-Star comes around, I don't know if it's fatigue or what it is. Maybe it's getting to be a mental situation at this point, but he just seems to kind of falter toward the end of the year.
And it is, yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, one of the things that he, at least in St. Louis, was known for, you know, getting that sinker over and trying to get people to beat the ball into the ground, that's when he's at his best. And, you know, at least anecdotally, those kind of pitchers are better when they're tired. So you
right.
think you get stronger as the season goes on, or at least,
yep.
you know, record would be better. So it was, that's interesting. But, yeah, the Nationals, I don't think they're going to lose 100 games this year.
No.
And they may not get out of last, but they'll be better.
Well, you never know. The problem every year is on paper, when all these previews come out, everyone's on an even surface. But as soon as the season starts and the injuries start to hit, you never know what can happen.
That's true. That's one of my dad's favorite sayings at one time was, they don't play the games on paper. So, you know, once you get into the real world, just about anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the next news of the day was the fact that the Braves starter, Jarris Jurgens, and I'm never real good at pronouncing that, but I hope I'm pretty close, has a sore shoulder. And he's getting an MRI on Wednesday. That sounds not good if you're a Braves fan.
Well, again, it might be a precautionary thing, but like you say, you don't just go and get one of these things for the hell of it. You do it because there's some concern. And again, you're starting off right away. If there's something wrong with him, what are the Braves going to do? Are they going to look for somebody during spring training? There's still a few free agents out there waiting to be picked up. Are they going to bring up someone from the minors with no experience? Are they going to promote from someone who's already been on the major league roster? It's a shame that these things keep happening at earlier and earlier ages in a time when athletes are supposedly in better shape than they've ever been.
Yeah, it is. It's true. It seems like the pitchers are getting these kind of, and we don't know that his is that way, but major injuries early enough in their career that they can sit out a year or two and still come back and still not have hit their potential, you know, peak yet, which is something that you probably didn't see 20 or 30 years ago. But on a Braves team, you know, they traded off Vasquez to the Yankees and Tim Hudson's coming back. You know, I know he came back at the end of last year, but, you know, his first full season after injury, they really don't need a whole lot to dampen their pitching staff. I don't know. I'm not being familiar with their minor league system, whether they've got a whole lot coming up afterwards, being that Tommy Hansen's already made it up. But I would think that this is something that's got Frank Wren and Bobby Cox kind of holding their breath and seeing what the results are on Wednesday.
If there's one thing Bobby Cox doesn't need in what's supposed to be his last year, it's a headache like this.
That's true. The Braves, I'm sure, are going to try to do everything they can to have him have a successful last go-around, and this was not in the playbook.
Well, in addition to Jurgens, you have other people who are coming back from injuries, like you said. Billy Wagner is looking for his first full year back after his disappointing year last year, and even without the injuries, Chipper Jones had a lousy year last year, and who knows what's going to happen with him, and Troy Glaus is trying to make a comeback as well, so Braves got some challenges ahead.
They definitely do. And they're in a division where, you know, right now, at least, again, on paper, Philadelphia seems to be the class of it. But everybody else in that mix has some questions. And so you know, a solid year, they could be in the playoff hunt, but they've got to answer those questions in a positive manner. And that's something they'll start determining, I guess, this week.
Well, talking again about injuries, you know, the Mets have several players who are trying to come back from injuries. Number one is Jose Reyes. They're catalyst, and their whole pitching staff at one point or another was on the disabled list. So if they get those guys healthy again, who knows what they'll do? Who knows what the Phillies will do, the Braves, the Marlins? They can all be in the mix, and you never know, the Nationals might surprise.
This is true. Oh, and, you know, just talking about injuries, and you pointed out to me when we were exchanging emails, the list on ESPN.com of the, you know, top nine players coming back from injuries. I was kind of surprised to see that they weren't all Mets. It seemed like everybody that was in a Mets uniform last year went down at some point in time. But they do have Jose Reyes as the top name on that, and that's going to be, you see them more than I do, being over in that area. But I would think that as Reyes goes is really kind of how the Mets go.
Well, I unfortunately, being a Met fan is somewhat being a pessimist at times, especially the last 2 or 3 years. You have the Carlos Beltran situation where he decided just recently that he was going to have surgery, so he's not going to be available for a while. It's kind of disconcerting, the philosophy behind some of these players and some of the teams as to who's supposed to be doing what and when are they supposed to be doing it.
Yeah, like you say with Beltran coming in and getting that surgery late, not to the same degree, but, following the Cardinals, they had Brendan Ryan get a wrist surgery in the last week. He should be ready for opening day, but, again, you start cutting on people this close to when games start, and you just kind of wonder why these things don't get done with plenty of recovery time instead of cutting it so close.
Well, I think some of the philosophy is that these kids think they're invulnerable and that they don't want to think that they need the surgery. They think they can fight through it. There's something admirable to be said for that, but there does come a time when you do have to decide, this is more serious than I thought, and they really have to take care of it.
Yeah. And sometimes getting that through their heads is probably a very difficult prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Looking through some of these other names on this injury bounce back list, of course, the next name on down is Ben Sheets, and that's one I think that a lot of people are going to be watching, being that he didn't pitch at all last year, but he has been so dominant in the past, and whether he can get that as he not only to, coming back from surgery, but to a whole different league and a pitching system as well.
Yeah, you always wonder how these guys, some need a change of scenery to rejuvenate them. Others you worry about their mental makeup. Are they going to be ready to go when the gun goes off, or are they going to be holding back? When Carl Pervano was with the Yankees, that was a big knock against him, is that he was too scared to really test it and go all out.
Yeah, you've got to kind of feel your way back. I know that, and again, bringing this back to what I look at, we had that with Chris Carpenter the last few years where he was, injury prone, and in fact, even last year, we didn't know exactly what you were going to get with him, and whether he was going to have to feel his way back into things or if he was going to come back full throttle, and obviously he did.
Yeah, you ended up getting a Cy Young contender.
That's right, and that was, I think, everybody knew he had that kind of potential, but you temper that with, you're coming off of major injuries, and you don't think you can do that again. Sheets is moving, not only is he got that, but he's moving into the harder league. Granted, a pitcher's type of ballpark in Oakland, but moving into the tougher league, a league he's not familiar with, unless he gets off to a strong start, it could be a long season for him.
Well, the one thing I think that might help is that no one's really expecting the A's to do much this year, so anything they get will be bonus.
That's true. And, of course, if he does well and the A's don't, then he may be back on the market come June and seeing what the A's – maybe Billy Bean trying to cash in on that a little bit.
It's funny to read some of these preseason magazines and the way they describe some of these players is You know, if, by the All-Star game, if their teams aren't doing well, they'll be with other teams.
Yeah, and that's always the kind of people already start looking toward to, okay, well, is this guy going to be, you know, I think a lot of people think that maybe Adrian Gonzalez out of San Diego, if they don't have a strong season, will be moved at the All-Star break or the trading deadline, and you know, and others like that. And it's hard to start thinking about July when they haven't even thrown a first pitch yet. But I guess that's what people are paid to do, is look that far ahead.
No, I'm just curious. You know, I'm here on the East Coast. I'm here in the New York area, with the major media market, where everything is played up to the hilt. You know, the least little hangnail becomes a major issue. I'm just curious where you are, Daniel. How does the media treat the team? The Cardinals have been doing well for the last several years, so there's not too much to complain about. But how does the media generally treat the team?
I think on the most part, they are fairly supportive of the team. Of course, you know, this is kind of just based on some of the reputations of the East Coast writers and all that. But they will question. I mean, obviously, they're going to question what's going on, but they're not necessarily going to be, you know, picking and digging and really throwing up the hard balls at the management or Tony Russo or anybody of that nature. I don't want to say that they're, you know, complacent or just take what they get, because they are very good media sources. You know, I'm friends. Well, I'm in contact with a few of them, and they do a very good job, and they really do get to the information. But I don't think they're as adversarial with a team as maybe some others are, because in St. Louis, there's one major paper, and I think they had another one start up as an internet only venture, you know, just a few months ago. So there's not that huge competition like there is in a New York, when there's, you know, 6, 7, 8 papers all trying to make get an angle on a story.
Right.
So let's see. This list is some interesting people. You know, we talked about, you know, Glaus, and there's Ricky Weeks, who is on this list every year, I believe, because for one reason or another, he cannot stay healthy, and in the same regard, Joel Zamaya is on here as well. But, you know, every team has got some guy that is coming back from injury that they really need to have produced. And, you know, that's one of the things that makes guesstimating on the season so hard, is to know, you know, are these guys going to be able to come back?
Well, just to go over the list really quickly, they list Chris Young from the Padres, Weeks, as you mentioned, Jake Westbrook from the Indians, Glaus, as I mentioned before, from the Braves, Connor Jackson from the Diamondbacks, Scott Shields from the Angels, and Joel Zamaya from the Tigers. Now, some of these guys are playing on teams that, again, are not expected to do much. I don't know if their single contribution will make any kind of difference, you know, maybe move them from fifth place to fourth place. Other guys like Shields, he's on the Angels. You know, I don't know, you know, they live pretty well without him. You know, he can only help. Zamaya, the Tigers also, you know, needs to help out a little bit. You know, their pitching staff after Verlander and Bonderman is questionable at best. So it'll be you know, interesting to see. And who knows who's going to go down during spring training.
Well, that's true. Like we, you know, when we led this, you know, discussion off, it's Richard Zins, you know, I mean, it could be, you know, somebody coming into camp that's not completely right, or somebody that takes a, you know, tweaks something on a couple of spring training games. You never know. What you've got going into camp this week is not necessarily what you're going to have, you know, leaving camp at the end end of March, beginning of April.
Right, right. I think one of the saddest things to see is someone who's coming back for an injury, throw a couple of pitches, and then, you know, just walk off with his head hanging.
Yeah, it's always tough when you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And to watch somebody know that time is over.
And that kind of segues into, you want to talk about some retirements?
Oh, yeah, that sounds reasonable enough. I guess the biggest news was that, you know, the last week was that Tom Glavine and Frank Thomas retired. and then at least those that follow Twitter, and I guess it was somewhat in the major media as well, thought that Mark Mulder had retired this week, and then apparently he has not quite yet. It's hard to know how you can tell, being that Mark Mulder hasn't thrown a pitch in a couple of years, but I guess that's the same with Glavin and Thomas. It's kind of, I don't remember a situation as much recently where a guy took the year off and then retired, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think some of these guys, given the market these days, are even if after sitting out a year, they're hoping that someone will be desperate enough to give them another shot. Certainly, Thomas might have felt that way, and Glavin, you hate to give it up. I don't even think it's a question of money. When you get to that stage, it's like the Brett Favre. You know, you don't want to give up the camaraderie, the competition. And it's hard to quit.
Well, that's true. But then again, and then on the flip side of that, I think that some of the others that have retired, and maybe I'm not sure if it was Frank Thomas that said this, or maybe some of the other smaller guys like Mark Loretta or something like that, where they've been at home for a year and they've gotten to be with their family and they've gotten to be with their kids, and they realize that, you know, it's just not worth the grind of separation and working toward that for maybe another year or so. It's time to call, hang it up.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, Scott Schoenweiss just signed a minor league deal with the Brewers the last couple of days. You know, unfortunately, he had that horrible situation where his wife died at the beginning of last season, and he has four kids all under the age of 14, I believe. And he needed to take that time off to get his family situated, get his head on straight. But again, you know, now that he sees that they are being taken care of, he still wants to play.
Yeah, and then hopefully that he'll be able to, because if nothing else, it'll be a good story and a good for him. I know that it can imagine how tough that would be to go through that kind of situation. Yeah, it's good to see him at least giving it another try and see what comes out of that.
So. Yeah, even as difficult a time as he's had on the field, let alone off the field, everyone's always looking for a situational lefty.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you can get people out, and Jesse Roscoe proved that if you can get them out and you're left-handed, you will have a job until they have to cart you off the mound.
That's right.
It's amazing how long some of these situational guys can linger along.
I'm all for that. As somebody who has recently passed the age where there's absolutely no hope of getting on a major league roster, I'm always for the Hoyt Wilhelm types, the Jesse Orozcos, you know, who pitch well into their 40s.
Yeah, as I progress in that direction, I think I have a greater respect and admiration for them as well. when it gets hard enough to get up in the morning to be able to go out and do that kind of thing is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of veer off a little bit from that and talk about people that may have to retire because they're not getting jobs, and that leads us to the discussion of Scott Boras. Lisa Swan, who is a member of the BBA, she writes for Subway Squawkers, but she had an article up at another site, the Faster Times, talking about if Scott Boras is losing his mojo, and I think the biggest focus of that is Johnny Damon and the fact that he still has no job as camps open, even though he's really, really wanted, I think, to go back to the Yankees, and the Yankees wanted him back, but it seems like Boras kind of got in the way of that.
Well, you wonder how much this is the animosity towards Boras, who's had a reputation as being the type of person that the clubs just do not like to deal with. How much of it has to do with the economic times? She makes a comment here about being insulted by an offer that is just slightly less than you're demanding because it's a matter of honor. I think some of these guys have to take into consideration what's going on in the real world. Because I don't think they're going to win a whole lot of fan support on principle at this point.
No, I agree that you're not going to get somebody to cry tears for you because you're not making, you know, 20 million and somebody's offered you, you know, 10. Most people are not going to be that pathetic, especially like you say in this economic environment. To some degree, I wonder if maybe it comes down to, you know, Boros always seemed to be able to get a team to maybe bid against itself to bring in that mystery team into a negotiation. And if it's just not maybe a different era of GM saying, look, this is what we're going to do, and if you don't like it, we're not going to, you know, you can't force us into doing something that, you know, we don't want to do. We're going to stick with it. And, you know, if we, with the sabermetrics on the rise, we can say, hey, we can get, you know, player X for this amount, and he's going to give us 80% of it. Why should we pay you that much more?
Exactly. But, you know, 20-some-odd years ago, they called this collusion.
That's true. And that's true. And, you know,
really,
I guess
it's a good business sense.
Well, yeah, as long as you do it without talking to anybody else about it. I guess everybody marching in the same line but not realizing the others are going there is fine. It's when somebody draws a map that makes it an issue. But I agree. And, you know, we saw that last year. I think that the union came out and started, you know, throwing around collusion words, even though it was, you know, nobody was going to buy that because of how much people, you know, teams were losing money or at least reducing their forecast of how much they were going to make because of, you know, the lack of people showing up to the ballpark with the economy the way it was. But, you know, that's why it didn't get any traction. If baseball was growing at an extremely large rate and these kind of things were happening, then I think you would be able to make that stick a little bit more.
Do you find it kind of funny that the one team that's looking at them really hard right now is from the city that's probably in the worst financial shape, Detroit?
There is the irony there. It seems like the one thing that maybe is working in Detroit is the Tigers. I think they had a pretty good article in Sports Illustrated last summer about how, you know, they were doing a pretty good job of drawing fans and being a kind of a symbol for Detroit, maybe for a rebirth in Detroit. I mean, it helps that their ownership is fairly well established, and maybe people are eating more pizzas now that they can't afford to go anywhere else.
It's kind of interesting that it's not quite the same, but just as Detroit is, the Tigers are to Detroit what the Saints are to New Orleans.
And that's true. I mean, I think you would see that if the Tigers did, you know, get into the World Series in the next couple of years, you'd have some of the similar storylines that you had with New Orleans of a decrepit city that hopefully is making some sort of comeback and is latching on to their sports team to help pull them up.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if they can fulfill that storyline in the next few years. The other, I guess there's also, at least I also looked in the Boros article, it talks about Felipe Lopez, who was a Boros client and actually wound up firing him this week because he really thought he should have a job by now. And he had a good enough season last year to at least, you would have thought he'd have signed with somebody. And, you know, I think it's all, you can kind of go all the way back to when Alex Rodriguez, you know, fired him a few years back. Boris still commands respect, don't get me wrong. He doesn't seem to be the largest shark in the pool anymore.
But he still has a pretty impressive client list. There's a link, I believe, a link in Lisa's, there's a link in hers that goes to a client list. And it is still pretty impressive. But, you know, good for these guys who, you know, they are the boss. He works for them. He's supposed to be doing stuff for them, not vice versa. If they're not happy with an employee, you fire the employee.
Agreed. I think that so often, and then, you know, some people look at it, the fact that if you hire Boris, then you obviously are wanting the biggest deal. But, you know, occasionally they've got to realize that, you know, sometimes it's take whatever you can get, or, you know, the best offer that's on the table may not be exactly what you want. You've got to tell him, look, you may not like it, but I do, and let's do it.
Yep.
And I think that's, to some degree, what happened with Matt Holliday. You know, that was Boris's client, Boris's big client of the year. And he got a good deal from the Cardinals, probably more than he really would have gotten anywhere else. But, you know, when you get a 7-year 120, when you're asking for maybe 8 years 180, that's, you know, a lot less too, and it may have been Holiday finally saying, look, this is where I want to be. At least he's come out later and said he likes the area, blah, blah, blah. You know, the stuff everybody says after they sign a $120 million deal. it may have been a little bit of behind-the-scenes pushing to make sure that this didn't get away from them as well.
It's just funny you say that because, Jason Bay just signed with the Mets a four-year deal for $66 million, and there's some grumbling that he's not appreciative enough. The Mets have a hard time, it seems. I guess the way they've been going recently, they're not. Not everybody wants to come play in New York anymore.
And that is surprising, just given to where they were even 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And in the last even sooner than that, we went in 07 and 08, leading the division
until the last day of the season.
Yep. So call it the curse of Yadier Molina, but. it is hard to believe that the Mets are not necessarily. I know they've never been the destination for New York. I mean, if people were thinking New York a lot of times, players, they were thinking, hey, they've still always been, a player for the big players to come in. And you're right, it just didn't seem like this offseason they were that much of a destination for those kind of guys.
I think the front office is in maybe too much turmoil. I don't know what kind of reputation Omar Minaya has at this point, or what he ever had. Maybe he was just given too much of the benefit of the doubt. But when you work for a team that has the big pockets like the New York teams do, you're expected to come up with results. And if people don't want to play here, not everybody's meant to play in the New York spotlight. Even somebody like Randy Johnson. Came here for a season and didn't stay. He could have stayed. They certainly would have paid whatever he wanted, but he didn't want to stay.
Yeah. And you're mentioning Minaya. Will he make it out through the year? Do you think? Is there some kind of last straw that breaks the camel's back that will have him fired, or has he got enough support and ownership to ride it out?
It's hard to say. I think Jerry Manuel is in more danger of not seeing it through midseason if the Mets continue to falter. When people get hurt, at what point do you say it's tough luck? At one point do you say it's poor management somehow? They're not getting the right kind of training. They're not getting the right kind of stretching or diet regimen, whatever. But it's just kind of when so many injuries happen to a team for the stretcher that's hit the Mets, I think there's some examining that has to be done, no pun intended.
That's one of the things that we see, the baseball fans outside the area, looking and seeing, trying to determine, what's it going to take, because it seems like there's been a lot of talk about him getting the axe and maybe moving forward. And it would seem a rough season might do that for him.
Well, maybe that's what they need. Maybe they need that kick in the pants to get him on the right track again.
Well, we've hit a little bit past our halfway mark, and so far so good as far as I can tell. What do you think?
I think it's going pretty good.
All right. Let me get out the call-in number again is 347-884-8690. If you're on our blog talk page, there's a chat room there that we're kind of monitoring if you want to put a question over there. But I think we will move on and kind of just give an over. We'll just talk a little bit about how the divisions look this year. Very early with camps just opening up and we've given all the caveats of people getting hurt and people not performing and all that kind of stuff. But just on paper, how things look. And you want to start with the American League or the National League?
Yeah, sure. Starting off in the American League East, I think people outside of the New York and Boston area are a little tired of every year coming down to the Yankees and the Red Sox. I am not a Yankee fan. Born and raised in the New England area, so I have more allegiance to the Red Sox, and the Red Sox are looking pretty good this year. If is a big word. If their starting rotation is all healthy, I don't think there's anybody who can stop him. You know, you got John Lester, Josh Beckett, John Lackey, Clay Buchholz, and Daisuke Matsusaki. If he's healthy and has his head on straight, they can really lead the team. There's a solid infield, solid outfield. Ortiz is questionable as DH, but I have a feeling that this year he's going to make some sort of comeback. The Rays are also in the mix. You know, most of the publications have picked them for third place. The Orioles are mired in fourth place, and the Blue Jays are bringing up the rear. So it looks like it's going to be hopefully a three-way race between the Rays, who were the sweethearts a couple of years ago by making it to the series like that. So that's a quick overview of the East. Over in the Central, Twins are moving into a new ballpark, which is going to be interesting because it's an outdoor ballpark after playing indoors for so many years. And temperatures in April are going to be pretty brisk, to say the least. Again, good pitching staff. They've got MVP in Mauer. Morneau at first base is a new mantle in Maris, a new set of M&M boys. Again, solid all around. The Tigers also. Hopefully their pitchers can pull everything together. And I don't want to keep repeating it, but everything depends on everybody being healthy, playing healthy. The White Sox also have a good pitching staff with Mark Burley, Jake Peavy, and Freddy Garcia and Gavin Floyd. There's a solid 1-4. The infield, the outfield, also solid. And then you have the Royals and the Indians. It's got to be disappointing to be a Royals fan when you have like one or two players that stand out above the rest. And, you know, what must they be thinking? Are they playing their escape for when they hit their free agent years? And finally, taking a quick look at the West, the Angels are the pick of the litter out there. They've got three starting pitchers who've won at least 10 games. They've got a very strong closer in Brian Fuentes. Good infield, good outfield. I mean, I keep saying that. The Mariners might surprise people. The Rangers might surprise people. And unfortunately, the A's don't look like they're going to be surprising anybody.
Okay, let me ask you then a few things that kind of came to mind as you were going through those teams. There's been a lot of talk, at least I've read a few things about perhaps the Yankees. I don't want to say easing off, but maybe not having that sense of urgency after winning a title last year. Do you think that'll come into play?
In a way, yes. In a way, no. I would say, yeah, because it's the first time they've won in several years. So they might take a little sigh of relief. But, you know, everybody wants to repeat. Jeter's heading into the last year of his contract, and he's going to be 37 real soon. And what's going to happen with him? He's the face of the franchise. How are the Yankees going to treat him? And how is he going to treat the Yankees? Is he going to hold them up, you know, based on his reputation, you know, thinking he's bulletproof? Is he going to be reasonable and not demand a five-year contract? I mean, he's been slowing down defensively for several years. He had a fantastic year offensively this year. But who knows, you know, what his rationale is going to be. There might be a sense of urgency because some of these guys are getting older. Jorge Posada is getting older. Andy Pettit, who knows how long these guys can keep going. And they are starting to incorporate some younger players gradually. You know, they've always been a team, when George Steinbrenner was in charge, that relied on the veterans. But now that he's sort of out of the picture, they're bringing in people more gradually. You know, the new guys, there's some new guys coming on the team, Javier Vazquez, Curtis Granderson. They bring with them some cachet, and you know, hopefully they can more than replace the people who place they're taking.
Yeah, there was enough mix up, I think, or mixing of the players to probably get enough new blood in there. I know that there's going to continually in New York. you can never settle for a championship. You continue to go out and win another one. So they're going to have that press.
Well, I mean, even a couple of years ago when the Yankees were having a what for them is a mediocre first month, you know, the fans were calling for Girardi's head. You know, the New York fans, without speaking of the benefit of living anywhere else in the major league world, are the most impatient fans you can find.
I'm sure that is a product of a success to some degree, because it's hard to wait when you've had that kind of success. I know that I think in St. Louis, even, you know, after three or four good seasons, a slow start can be at least a cause for concern, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I read something about the Rays cutting payroll, not for this year, but for next year. If they're not in the mix, does that mean they're going to start, you know, shipping off Carl Crawford? And if so, that could really make a difference in that race.
Well, they're already talking about Crawford not being on the team by the end of the year. You wonder how much of that plays into the players' heads. To some, maybe some don't care. Maybe those who have been with the team grown up with the team like he has, have developed an affinity toward their club, and they don't want to go anywhere else. But it is a business, and you're not in it to make friends. You're in it to make money. And if it means getting rid of a few high-salary players to hold on to what money you have, that's what these people are going to do. And I don't think the fans realize that enough.
Yeah, this is true. And I guess the only thing I want to mention, I have heard some people kind of promote the Rangers as a team to win the West, because it looks like they finally may have a little bit of pitching to go with that offense. Do you think that they can challenge Anaheim, or is that one of those things where maybe the ballpark finally just does them in too late in the season?
Well, if Rich Harden has a good season and Scott Feldman repeats what he did last year, he, like Marquis, is one of these guys who has a good first half and falters at the end. But unfortunately, he's one of these guys who seems to alternate good year, bad year, and which means that this will be his bad year. They've got players like Kinsler and Michael Young, and Josh Hamilton hopefully will make a comeback. Nelson Cruz, you know, will hit another 30 home runs, and they've got another solid closer. So, they're not a bad team. And, if something goes wrong in Anaheim, you know, who knows? Stranger things have happened.
That's true. Well, let me just – I want to hit the hot of the National League East, as we have with 15 minutes left in our show. Again, the call-in number 1-347-884-8690. National East, it's still Philadelphia's division to win, especially bringing Roy Halladay. Losing Cliff Lee, that made that, didn't really necessarily jump them up a whole lot in that regard. If they kept Lee, I don't know that we'd bother playing the season. They should, you know, their pitching staff is still strong and the offense is incredibly potent. So I don't think they obviously have to be the favorite in that division. As we've talked about with the Mets, it really depends on how they get. Having Beltran not necessarily be there for the beginning of the season could kind of bring back memories of last season. But if they can stay healthy, there really isn't any reason they can't make up a lot of the ground between them and the Phillies. Florida should still be a fairly strong team, I think. And again, like we've talked about, really has to worry about what kind of injury problems they're going to have and if Chipper Jones is going to start showing his age. And while there's still a possibility to move up a little bit, division, they still got a long way to go before they're going to be a challenging force in that division. And I guess they may want to be their focus may be drafting Bryce Harper when the June draft rolls around and then pairing him with Strasburg and really trying to put a youth movement together for that team to maybe contend for quite some time. The Central, which is the division, of course, I should I should know the most about. Doesn't mean I do, but I should. I think the Cardinals have made the moves to stay on top of that. I probably maybe, you know, factor in the homerism, if you will, but they've got a very potent offense, especially with Pujols and Holiday. They've got, you know, and then other supporting players like Ludwig and Molina and Rasmus. And I really do like their pitching staff with Carpenter and Wainwright at the top of it. And, you know, they signed Brad Penny, which hopefully will give them a very strong three. And then they can go from there. And as being a Cardinals fan, I have to immediately discount any chance the Cubs have. That's just part of the contract. But again, the Cubs, you know, they will still make their noise in that division. They have not been the doormats that we're used to historically over the last few years. I still think that they have misses, but they were right there most of the last year, and losing Milton Bradley may help keep actions to a minimum. Milwaukee's added some pitching. They subtracted J.J. Hardy, which is not necessarily much of a subtraction. I think that they will also be in the hunt. I think Cincinnati, that people need to keep an eye on, they need to probably find a little bit more offense, but their pitching staff has really kind of come around the last few years, and they've got a chance to open some eyes. Houston and Pittsburgh, I still think, are on the bottom end of that division. Pittsburgh probably still doesn't break their under 500 streak, even though they've had some glimmers of hope for the future as well. You know, I think that the Dodgers probably still the team to beat. I don't think that there's been enough of a sea change out there in that division to really make much difference. The Giants will probably make a very strong run at the Colorado will be right in that mix, and then, you know, San Diego and Arizona. I still think San Diego, you know, they should have been better last than they were, and so if they can just, you know, make some sort of strides, then that could change the whole conversation of the West. That's a division that I think that just sometimes we don't know what you're going to get until they start getting on the field and putting the runs up and all that kind of stuff.
So as a baseball fan, what division would you most like to watch?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
For pure enjoyment's sake, not like you're a Cardinals fan, so you want to see the Cardinals run away with it. But for opening day to end of season, what division do you think would be the most exciting to follow?
I think if you're talking about teams and how close to the teams are, what kind of a pennant race you're going to have, it very well may be the National League West that would be the most interesting. For me, I'm also one that tends to like to watch, you know, maybe young players or anything like that. So I think the American League Central could be another division that's kind of intriguing to watch. What would you think?
I was actually thinking of the NL East because, again, using the big IF word, if the Mets and the Phillies and the Braves and the Marlins can all have a pretty decent season, if they can all keep the Phillies from running away with it, you know, that might be a pretty tight race, you know, well into the season.
Yeah, no, that's true. And then there's some big star power and power potential in that division, and so it could be a close one as well. I think, you know, with the right thing, any of these divisions can at least have two teams challenging and, you know, be within a game or two at the end of the year, if not three.
Do you see any problems of chemistry on any of these teams?
Well, you know, I think to some degree chemistry is the product of winning or losing. Same team that is over 500 is a crappy team, and so that team under 500 is a fractured, poisonous morass. But on the whole, I don't following them closely enough. You know, I don't think there's any team that's in contention that would have major chemistry problems. I mean, that's just me. Do you think there may be one that would?
Well, the only team that I've heard anything about are the Marlins, because some of their players have accused other players of being a little selfish, looking for their statistics. And I think any player who's heading into a free agency year, especially now, you don't have players who spend their whole careers with one team like a Ripken or a Gwynn or a Yastrzemski. So like every 3-4 years comes around and they're going to be playing for their numbers.
Yeah. Well, and then you say that, I think that makes this off season or this coming season's so interesting, following, Maurer in Minnesota and then Pujols in St. Louis, whether they can sign those extensions and stay with those teams and be the Ripken and Gwynn of this generation, or whether, that gets broken up and you see them moving on to for bigger money.
I hope so. For the fans' sake, I hope all these guys stay. Because when you think about it, how many millions of dollars do you need?
I don't need that many. I'll tell you that right now. If there's a line, I'll let you know. And I don't need that many. But you're right. It comes to a point where I know that the profit factor of I should get paid more than that guy. It doesn't matter what that guy is getting paid. But it comes to a point where, you need to be comfortable as well, because especially with, you see New York, a lot of people going to New York and kind of flopping after signing the big money contract.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have just under 10 minutes left. Move into our next segment, which, Ron, we'll talk a little bit about your blog and then some of the books, baseball books that are coming out, that you may be, people should be picking up.
Okay, my blog is basically devoted to baseball literature and other media. The name of it is Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, and it's basically concerning anything that you can fit on a bookshelf, whether it's a book or a DVD or some baseball art, or not so much collectibles and memorabilia, but on occasion those two. And it's interesting. Most baseball fans know about Mark McGwire's return to your team as a hitting coach, and then the controversy that's ensued. So it's kind of interesting that there are four books coming out at the same time, basically, that deal with sluggers of the past, of the baby boomer generation. One of the books that's getting a lot of buzz lately is Willie Mays, The Life and Legend by James Hirsch, which is the first authorized biography of Mays ever, and the first adult biography of him in quite some time. There's a new book out about Henry Aaron, The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron by Howard Bryant. There's a new book by Jane Levy, who wrote a biography, a very well-received biography of Sandy Koufax a few years ago. This time she's looking at The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle, and The End of America's Childhood, which will be coming out, I believe, in May. And going back to the M&M Boys, there's also a new biography of Roger Maris, Baseball's Reluctant Hero by Tom Calvin and Danny Peary. And I just want to mention one other thing, because this is a freebie to all the baseball fans out there. If anyone remembers the old sporting news guides, and sporting news was based in St. Louis, was it not?
It was.
Well, if anybody remembers the guides that they used to come out with, Sabre, the Society for American Baseball Research, is offering a free, quite substantial guide. It's called the Emerald Guide. All you have to do is go to sabre.org, that's sabr.org, and you can download it free. And this is like a 500-page book that you can read on your computer. You can buy a hard copy version of it for about $25. And this has like pretty much anything you would want. It has statistics. It has reviews of the 2009 season, minor league, major league, directories. Certainly is a free PDF download. You can't beat it. There are other books coming out that I will be reviewing on my blog during the course of the year, as well as providing author interviews and other features. So I invite anybody who's interested in that sort of thing to visit rksbaseballbookshelf.com.
Yeah, it's you mentioned those when we were discussing things, and to hear, to think about, you know, just getting one autobiography like that, but at a time, but to get four good, strong books coming out about that era of baseball that makes, you know, maybe people focusing on steroids nowadays, and to harken back to that time period is pretty impressive.
It's interesting because, you know, these books, and I know the Hirsch book took several years to develop, so it's not like these books are coming out as a refutation of the steroids age. And these books are not the quickie kind of things that are turned around based on specific events. A lot of thought went into all of these projects.
Well, yeah, in fact, well, I've got a digest sitting here right in front of me, the most recent one, and there's an excerpt of the Willie Mays book in there. I haven't had a chance to actually read it yet, but, I mean, they don't take those fly-by-nights and put them in Reader's Digest. So.
No, I don't know what they've included, but for me so far, I haven't finished it yet, but the one chapter is devoted entirely to his catch in the 1954 World Series, and I think that would be a fine addition to any compilation of the best sports writing of the year would be it's almost like watching a documentary of that one incident.
After talking with you on things, I've probably got to add to my Amazon cart to get some of these books. So anyway, and I'll agree with you on that Emerald Guide. I downloaded it. I haven't had a chance to really get into it, but kind of skim through it, and there is a ton of information in there. It's not necessarily something you sit down and just, you know, read from beginning to end, but if you want to have a good reference about what happened last year and then standings and things for different teams, it's an amazing resource, and to get it free is just mind-boggling.
And for those out there who aren't familiar, this is very similar to the ESPN-type encyclopedias that come out. And it's certainly a lot cheaper for the companies to put it out like this, a kind of a print-on-demand type thing, because they don't sell a whole lot of them at the store. And like this, it gets them out there. And then Sabre, if you're so inclined, would appreciate some sort of contribution or donation.
This is true. Well, we have just a couple minutes left. I think that, you know, for a first outing, it wasn't. Is there any last comments or topic that you want to hit real quick before we wrap it up?
Well, all I can say is, you know, having gone through a blizzard the last week with an additional few inches of snow today, just the thought of spring training makes me feel a little warmer.
No kidding. I, being here in Arkansas, not having the extent of the weather that you have, but still woke up this morning with 19-degree temperatures, and to know that they were starting to see the pictures of the warm sunshine and the pitchers and catchers and others that are already down there, and to start getting a regular stream of baseball news, and there's just nothing like it. Between building up into to opening day, it's probably even more important to us right now than it is opening day to get that kick of baseball.
And here's just hoping that everybody can stay healthy and everybody can have a good year, and the fans enjoy it, and there's no issues, no more names to come out, and we can get back to just good old baseball.
And I don't think there's anything else we can add to that. So, for Ron from Don Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, I'm Daniel from 270 at the Bat. You can find all our member blogs at our official website, which is www.baseballbloggersalliance.com. If you're a blogger out there that's interested in becoming a member of the BBA, you can email us at baseballbloggersalliance@gmail.com, and we'll get you set up, and then you can join us, and maybe you can be hosting a podcast sometime soon. So thanks for joining me tonight, Ron, and enjoy the season.
Thank you, Daniel. It's been a lot of fun.
Night.
Good night.